without moving in my chair, and to my astonishment I saw, just behind us, there, Snow White, stately figure of a woman, looking exactly like a lovely statue of marble or alabaster. Her eyes were closed, her hands folded as if in prayer, she was moving near us, as if she was walking in a deep sleep. She passed slowly between us, our hands being linked, she passed through our arms, wrists and hands. At the actual second of her passing between us, the cold became 100 times more intense, though I, 97, should not have thought it possible a moment before. I have never felt anything like it. We saw her profile plainly as she passed so closely. Good heavens, said my neighbor, it's my mother, but why does she look like that? She moved, one can scarcely call it walked, as she appeared to glide over the floor, without moving her legs or feet, towards the curtains, and disappeared. A few minutes later she reappeared, happy and animated, and had an intimate conversation with her son, who was very pleased, I gathered, with all she told him. At a much later date, a spirit communicator explained to me that sometimes the spirits who were not ordinarily in close touch with the earth conditions, would find themselves overcome by a sleepy, dreamy condition when actually entering the physical vibrations. This only lasted a short while with most people, but if it lasted longer, they would be escorted back to their own planes by guides whose work it is to help in that way, because they would not be able to communicate, or manifest satisfactorily, while in that condition. At the same time, it was a very weird and puzzling phenomenon, the only one of its kind that I have ever witnessed. 98. Chapter 29, Strange Things Begin to Happen in Our Home. We enjoyed many interesting sittings with other physical mediums, too. I know that many people say that they do not like materializing, or even the direct voice, seances. But I think it is extremely valuable to have such experiences, so that one knows what is possible to be done, given the right conditions. Why don't these things happen to ordinary people, in the ordinary houses belonging to ordinary people, is a question that is often raised. Well, they do so happen. I have had many friends who have never attended a materializing séance, and who have had extraordinary phenomena happen in their own homes. They don't understand them, and sometimes they are afraid of them, possibly because they don't understand. Therefore the manifestation is usually wasted on them. The guides have often told us that they knew a certain person had power that they could use, but that directly they did so, he or she became so frightened that they had to desist. The guides have to be very careful with nervous people, because when they, their guides, are working on the earth, and using power that they take from us, they are in our conditions, not their own, and they don't always realize what effect they are creating. Occasionally they think that they have taken a small amount of power, and discover either that it is stronger than they expected, or for some unknown reason, they have produced a much stronger effect than they anticipated, or even desired at the time. This applies especially to cases of spontaneous phenomena, which are always more difficult to manage or control than the carefully planned, orderly phenomena of the regular séance room, where the guides, controls, and mediums have all been cautiously trained during a long course of development. There are, of course, some people who have a larger fund of this physical power apparently near the surface, and the guides can use it more quickly and easily than when it is buried deeply, though I have noticed that where it needs careful digging out and slow patient development, it is of a better and often more lasting quality than that which springs up rapidly. Very often the power shows itself in people whom one never suspected of possessing it. Indeed, they would not have believed it possible themselves. I shall never forget the first visit paid us by two friends, a man and his wife, who came to stay with us for a weekend. The last people in the world, one would have said, who would show signs of psychic power. After their arrival, we went out for a short walk before tea. I had a curious impression that something of importance was going to happen, though I could not imagine what it might. 99. B. Perhaps a letter coming by the late afternoon post, I thought. Anyway, so strongly did I feel this, that I asked my friends if they would mind cutting short their walk and returning home for tea, but I did not tell them the reason. We sat down, and while I was pouring out the tea, I was amazed to notice a strong smell of incense. It was quite as strong as if one were burning it just in front of one's face. I looked at my friends and saw a puzzled look dawning on both their faces. "Do you smell anything?" I asked. "Yes," they both replied. "It's incense. Where is it coming from? The room seems to be full of it." It did indeed. At that moment, my friend's young son came into the room. Directly he opened the door, he cried out, "Oh, Dad, the room is full of scent. Oh, it is so strong." We told him to come in and close the door, and have his tea. The scent died away, then came again, stronger than ever. My husband then came in, and he, too, exclaimed immediately, saying, "Why, the place is full of incense. Have you been burning some?" Though he felt perfectly certain we had none in the house. For about half an hour there, smell came and went. I got the impression that our friends must have power, and I asked them to sit at the table after tea, to see if Feda would speak to us and tell us what it meant. We did so, using a small bamboo table, and Feda came through immediately. She confirmed my impression and said that both our friends had power for materialization, direct voice, and levitation of objects, which the scientific investigator calls telekinesis, but which Feda usually calls dinkants, as she says the real name bothers her. She asked us to begin experimenting by sitting for the direct voice, but that first we must sit around the larger table in the dining room. When Feda mentioned direct voice, I reminded her of how, some years before, I had tried to develop that for 2 solid years. I have not told you about it because the sittings were almost abortive, and therefore there was nothing of interest to report. She replied that she was aware of it, but that our friend's power would show itself very quickly indeed, and that we should soon be given proof of it, if we would sit around the larger table. We looked at the table referred to, and laughed at the bare idea of seeing such a large and heavy one move. It was always used as a dining table, and would be 7 feet long and 4 or 5 feet wide, on 4 solid, heavy legs, one at each corner. On the following night we did as Feda requested, and sat around it, myself at one end, my husband at the other, and one of our friends on either side. We turned the gas light down a little, but not out. One could see clearly by it. Nothing happened, and we sat for half an hour or longer. Then I remembered that in the days of our table sittings with Florence and Nelly, Feda had always told us to hum or sing if nothing was happening, as it helped the psychic 100 conditions if one created harmonious vibrations. I suggested that we might sing Feda's favorite, "Abide With Me," and we did so. Directly we came to the line, "Where is death's sting, etc.," the table rose steadily on one side, until 2 of its legs were at least a couple of feet off the floor, our hands were resting lightly on top of it. It was lowered again, and rose again, rising and lowering rapidly but rhythmically in perfect time with our singing. had we had our hands underneath, and pushed it up and down, it would have been impossible to move so heavy an object with the quickness and lightness that Feder did. Until this moment I had completely forgotten that it was always on that significant line, where is death's sting, etc., that Feder began to move the table in some special way. My friends were amazed at this weighty table rising up and down so gracefully and lightly, as indeed we were ourselves. After we had sung the hymn through two or three times, Faber began tilting the table in threes, and I gathered from this that she wanted to spell out a message by the usual code, that is, one calls out the letters of the alphabet, and Faber tilts the table to each letter. One tilt for A, two for B, three for C, and so on. A slow method, you will say. Yes, but it was remarkable how quickly she did it. She tilted the table so rapidly that it took us all our time to call the letters quickly enough to keep up with her. By this means she spelt out a message to the effect that we were to turn a certain spare bedroom into a séance room, and gave us directions for fitting it up very much on the lines of the room used by the materializing medium of whom I told you. Except that she said no one was to sit in the curtained recess, as that would merely be used to collect the power in, and that we four, our two friends, my husband and myself, were to sit in a half circle across the corner, and that an aluminium trumpet should be placed horizontally on a stand between the curtains, facing us. The directions given were very clear, and we asked our friends to prolong their visit in order that we might carry them out. The next day we prepared the spare bedroom as directed, and sat as we had been told. Nothing at all happened, not even a rap. So after an hour we went downstairs and sat at the table again. Feder had very little power. Apparently she had used it up in her unsuccessful efforts upstairs. She managed to tell us to sit each night at the table, and not upstairs, until she gave us further instructions. Then she spelt out the words, bells, get bells. We were rather at a loss to know what she meant, but the next morning my husband went to a toy shop and bought a bunch of small bells such as one gives to a child to play with. That evening we moved the large table into the drawing room, as the house was a semi-detached one, and on a previous evening, when Feder became rather peremptory in her instructions, she lifted the table so high and flung it down again with such force that our next door neighbors banged on the adjoining wall in protest. So not wishing to annoy them further, we moved it, though it was a heavy and difficult job. There was a screen by the door to exclude drafts, and my husband hung the bells on the corner of it by a blue ribbon which he had tied on them, thinking Feder would admire the color. 101. After sitting for some time, and not getting any particular results except taps on their table, we began to sing the favorite hymn again, and on the line, where is death's sting? The bells were violently rung. The noise came so suddenly and, at their moment, so unexpectedly, we all jumped, which seemed to spoil the conditions, as nothing at all happened after. A moment before the bells rang, my husband said that he felt a small, warm hand placed right on top of his own, and left there for a few seconds. It was then removed, and the bells immediately rang. The next night, as soon as we had sat around the table, it moved, and Feder told us that the power was much stronger, and that we could now go back to the séance room upstairs, and that we were to sit each evening for an hour, until further orders. We went upstairs at once, and sat in the same order as previously, holding hands as I had done in the materializing séances. We had brought the bells upstairs and placed them on their stand beside the aluminium trumpet. While we were singing the usual hymn, "Abide with Me," the bells rang loudly. They were beyond reach of any one of us, either of our hands or feet. The room was almost in darkness, but not quite, as a small red lamp was burning in the farther corner by the door, but the light was prevented from falling directly on us by a screen we had placed in front of it. You must remember that we were all holding hands, so that if one of us moved, the next one would be aware of it. We sang the hymn again. This time, the stand, on which rested the trumpet, a tall wooden one, weighing several pounds, moved bodily, scraping loudly on their uncarpeted floorboards as it did so. Afterwards we found it had moved about a foot and a half from its original position. Nothing else happened, but we were all thrilled. You know it is thrilling, when some familiar everyday object that you know, such as a plant stand, which has stood solidly immovable for years, suddenly begins to behave in this extraordinary manner, animated by this little understood force that is directed by an unseen agency. Afterwards, during supper, we discussed it at length, and all agreed that it was more interesting and fascinating than anything we could imagine, though so far there had been no evidence of any discarnate intelligence save that of Feda spelling out their messages through the table. Next evening we sat again. The bells began to tinkle softly quite early in the sitting, and we found they were being rung three times, then a pause, and three times again. We asked Feda if she could answer questions with a yes or no, by ringing the bells. Three times for yes, and once for no. She was delighted with this suggestion and rang them vigorously. We put several straightforward simple questions to her that could be easily answered by an affirmative or negative. In this way we obtained quite a lot of directions as to what we ought to do in the future. One thing she told us was that no one of us must go into trance, under any condition. This was in answer to a question, as I, 102, had felt a tendency to go into trance. She said she wanted us all to remain quite normal, so that we could check and compare results and thoroughly appreciate any phenomena that might come. 103. Chapter 30, The First Breath, and What Followed It. The following evening the bells did not ring. We sat and sang quietly. We had also installed a musical box, which was a great help, as it filled in the pauses when we got tired of singing, or could think of nothing fresh to sing. While we were humming softly, I noticed a peculiar sound coming from the floor near my feet. It was a loud, heavy breathing. The friend who was sitting next to me heard it too. I felt his hand stiffen in mine. He trembled, so did I. I don't mind admitting it. It is a strange experience to sit in one's room and hear human breathing coming apparently out of the floor. It grew louder, louder still, then it came from a higher level, and soon I was able to locate it as coming from the direction of where the aluminium trumpet would be, on the stand. From being a breath, it became a breathy voice, but what the words were, if any, we could not tell. This went on for two or three nights. The breathing formed itself into sounds, and on their third night we could just make out the words, "Yes, I think so," and "Splendidly." It sounded to us like two or three people having a rather excited discussion behind their curtains. They were not addressing us at all, but seemed to be talking among themselves. It was like listening to the stage being prepared previous to an important production. After this, we thought we would speak to Feda again on the large table in order to find out how things were progressing, and if there were any hints or directions she wanted to give us. By means of the usual tilts, she told us that several guides were helping us, guides who had had experience in physical phenomena with other mediums, and that among them was Abdullah, for whom Fada had a very deep admiration, though she always referred to him as Ab, which somehow didn't seem very respectful. She said we must not go on sitting every night as we had been doing, because it would not be good for me. As I was giving my trance sittings each day as usual, and though very little, if any, physical power was drawn from me in the evening sittings, she knew I must go out and get more exercise in the open air. It is wonderful the care that controls take of their mediums. In this case, I was so intensely interested, I should never have thought of giving up the sittings, especially as I was feeling quite well. The following night, therefore, we did not sit, but the night after we did so and heard singing or humming in a deep bass voice. After it finished, Fada rang the bells, and regulating the sounds in the same way as she tilted the table, she spelt out, Ab, he, sing. Then the humming went on again, getting much louder, but Fada kept breaking in with the bells, repeating the words, Ab, he sing at regular intervals, which was quite unnecessary, we thought, though we were too polite to say so. 104. The musical box was wound up and played whenever we thought it necessary, and we heard feet shuffling on the floor, softly sandaled or naked feet, keeping time to the music. Fada again interrupted on the bells with, Ab, he dance. The effect was a swish, swish, swish sound. One could scarcely call it dancing, but we took Fader's word for it. We now began to notice curious heavy movements in the room, as if there were several quite solid people moving about near us, and behind the curtains. Occasionally we heard them whisper to each other. I felt a warm hand placed in mine. It lay there for about 5 minutes, then grew warmer, until it was so hot I spoke about it, and gradually the hand cooled again till it resumed a normal temperature. All this curious phenomena was, I learned later, the working up of the power, with their idea of eventually producing materialization. Evidently the guides and workers on their other side were as much in the dark as to what they could, or might be able to do, as we were. I have noticed that they often have to experiment carefully over a very long period before they can safely attempt any definite phenomena. I am also convinced that they are not always aware themselves of the effect they are producing, and sometimes, when we on Earth have been a little startled by some surprising and spontaneous manifestation, the guides have expressed astonishment afterwards as though, apparently, they were not aware that they had been able to use the power in such a strong manner. 105. Chapter 31, A Midnight Visitor. One startling instance of this kind was given us, which was very interesting indeed. During the sittings when Ab was shuffling or rubbing his feet on the floor in time to the music, it sounded so near me, as if a real, solid, physical body was doing it, I cried out. Oh, Abdullah, how strange it is. You are so near me, yet I cannot see you. I wish I could. He came nearer until his moving feet seemed almost to touch mine, and again I said I wished I could see him. Our friends both echoed this wish, but we had no strong hope of it being fulfilled. A few nights later, we had no seance that evening, my husband and I retired for the night, and as usual he was soon asleep. I lay awake for some time, and then dropped off. I must have only slept a little while when I was awakened by a sound on the landing. I then heard a fumbling at the door handle, it turned, and someone quietly entered their room. It was a moonlight night, and a wide casement window faced our bed, and in the moonlight that penetrated the curtains I distinctly saw a tall figure pass slowly between our bed and the dressing table. I was lying on the side of the bed farthest from their door. I don't mind admitting that I was very frightened, as I felt sure it was a burglar, as there had been several burglaries in the neighborhood recently. The figure advanced to the side of the bed where I lay and, to my horror, bent over me. I did not dare to move. My husband is slightly deaf in one ear, and he always lies on what he calls his good ear, so that it is not an easy matter to awaken him, as I knew from experience. I did not know what to do. I scarcely dared to breathe. The figure bent over me and placed a hand on my left side. I was lying partly on my right side. He patted me. It then flashed through my mind that a burglar wouldn't touch me if he could possibly avoid it, and he certainly wouldn't bait me. Why, it's a materialized spirit, was the thought that suddenly dawned upon me. At once all fear left me, and I quickly turned over to the left in order to try and see the figure better, but he took no notice of me, and backed away from the bed, glided round the foot of it, and out through the door again. I was very much ashamed of my fear, and my foolish thought that my visitor was a burglar, and I made up my mind to say nothing to my husband or friends about it, but I hoped that the visitor, whoever he might be, the figure appeared to be that of a man, would come again, and reveal his identity to me. In the morning I happened, for no particular reason, to glance into the séance room, which we always kept locked and cleaned out ourselves, so as to keep the curtains, stand, bells and anything that the guides used from contact with anyone else but 106 ourselves, as we felt that was their wish. I do not know what made me look in that morning, as there was nothing to tidy because it had all been put straight the previous day, when we were not sitting. I was amazed to see that the curtains were disarranged, the stand moved to a different position, and the bells had fallen on the floor. I called my husband's attention to this, and he was just as surprised and at a loss to account for it as I was, and our friends were the same. That night, an hour or two after we had gone to bed, we were awakened by the sound of screams and a scuffling in another part of the house, but presumably upstairs. Now, my friend and her husband were sleeping in a bedroom at the other end of the landing. In this room were two single beds, and we had placed them rather close together, only about a foot apart. What happened, as we heard afterwards, was this: my friend was awakened suddenly by a touch, and in the semi-darkness she could just discern a tall figure bending over her. She immediately screamed loudly, which awoke her husband. Being awakened from his sleep so abruptly, he forgot where he was and the position of the beds, jumped straight out and landed right on top of his wife. She thought the intruder had jumped on her, and hit out frantically, catching her husband right in the face. It took them 2 or 3 minutes to disentangle themselves and enter into mutual explanations. We calmed our friends, who were shaken and upset, and I told them about my experience of the previous night, and we came to the conclusion that it was probably Abdullah who had visited us, as my friend said she had a glimpse of a robed figure, though she thought it was that of a man. The next evening we sat at the table, as we thought it advisable to ask Fadlu if it was Abdullah, and if so to explain to him that we did not want manifestations of that kind disturbing us during the night, when we ought to be asleep. Before we could begin, Fader tilted the table and spelt out, "Poor Ab, very hurt. He very disappointed. Took much trouble to build up beautiful solid, so that you could see him. And you not welcome him. Poor Ab, no welcome, only screams and fear." Apologetically, we explained that we were grateful for Ab's visit, but that it was undesirable he should disturb us at night. Fader replied by reminding us that we had all repeatedly exclaimed, "Oh, if we could only see you, and that we had been so." Importunate Thadab in the kindness of his heart had endeavored to satisfy us, but had not realized that he must time his visit to suit us.